Welcome to Humming Fools, a fortnightly podcast and amateur auditory guide hosted by nobodies and dedicated to the artists, dreamers, or anyone out there with the creative urge. I am one of your nobodies, the Kyle period Stoop period. And I'm joined by my other nobody, my co-host, one of my best friends, Noah Bosley. Why are you laughing? Is it not true? Are we not friends?
It's true.
Did I misunderstand our relationship?
I've just never heard those words out loud.
You've never heard me say that you're one of my best friends?
No.
Dang, that's so sad. I'm really bummed out by that. Noah, you are one of my best friends.
Aw, thanks.
Thank you.
You're a good friend of mine.
We'll process that later. And tonight, we are visited by freelance filmmaker and video professional, Michael Kelly. Michael! Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It is an honor.
Friend, how are you tonight?
I am very good. I'm feeling calm, rested, and happy to be here.
Yeah. You're feeling rested? Didn't you work the past 2 days?
Yeah, but I got to have some really, really great sleep last night.
Oh, okay.
Much needed rest. So,
do you feel comfortable telling us how long you slept?
Oh, only about 8 or 9 hours.
Oh, okay.
All that you need, because if you sleep more than that, then it's like, okay.
Has
you're
a
oversleeping, and
yeah,
then you
has
feel
a
worse,
reverse
you know?
Effect. Yeah,
is that a scientific fact?
Oh, it's just what I read on Google.
So. Oh, okay.
So it is.
I need like, I need like 10 or 11 hours to like feel happy.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Which explains why I'm not happy so often in my life.
Are you happy right now?
Absolutely, because I'm surrounded by 3 very tall gentlemen. Mm. Like I think this is the tallest group we've had.
I just noticed that too. We are all very tall.
That's true.
And very lanky
and very unusual. Handsome. I wouldn't call myself lanky.
Really?
Yeah, I got love handles.
Okay, well, I'm more lanky.
Well, that's when you say, no, Kyle, you don't have love handles.
You bad.
Sorry.
All right.
Sorry.
Already 1 point against Michael.
Thank you, Noah. Are you
6'4"?
Yeah. Are you 6'4" or are you 6'5"?
I think 6'4".
Okay. And
that's
Noah?
6'5".
6'5", dang it. All right, you're the tallest one here.
Yeah.
But emotionally, pretty short.
I'm short of temper.
Michael, I just want to give some background really quick to our relationship. It's a newer one. It's blossoming, I think. If I had to describe it as a flower, I would say a blossoming flower. Noah, I will remind you, you're one of my best friends. Calm down. Don't get jelly. This is embarrassing. But I had known of you for a while. As we were discussing off air, you as well were a JBUer, John Brown University, if you're unfamiliar. We both were digital cinema students, but we didn't really interact or connect that much. But one day I saw you post something super tasty on Instagram. It was just a short little vignette, as you called it, of your friends. And I just thought it was gorgeous. Just like the very first shot was them wrapped in each other's arms and the sunset behind them. And I was compelled. I just was like, holy crap, this is glorious. Yeah. And so I had to comment. I did. You liked it. You responded.
and a
flower was born. And then we were able to look at each other's work some more intently. You saw my film. We talked about it. And then you were in town and we were able to connect and realize we were very similar. And
it was easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just immediately from the moment we met. It was like, yeah. This guy is going to be my friend.
Yeah.
Very, very cute.
It was super cute. And it was, again, that I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but that was the night that I ran into Ashton, Noah, and we both didn't talk to each other, and I felt bad. For listeners unfamiliar, I ran into a past guest that evening, and it was the whole like, well, I'm with someone, and you're with someone, and we're both in conversation.
I remember that.
And so I felt bad because I didn't want her to think that I didn't want to talk to her. She's like, you just had me on your show and then you never talked to me again. You used me, Kyle.
I actually saw her at Target last week, but she was on the phone. So didn't want to bother her.
I was like, well, she is white and she is a girl. So it makes sense that she was at Target. Anyway, Michael. Just super glad that we were able to connect. And then B, super thankful that you're able to be on the show. But for those unfamiliar, again, besides the quick things I talked, could you just give us a quick rundown of where you grew up and then how you got interested into film, how you ended up at JBU, and then I will take us from there. Too many questions. You'll forget what I asked, and I do that all the time. I'm like, all right, A, B, C, D, E, answer all.
Because that's how you think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think of bullet points, baby.
Yep.
Yeah, well, and then that kind of makes it hard to be quick about it. I'm not sure if I can be super quick.
Don't be quick.
We got all the time in the world. Sometimes.
Take your time with us, baby.
But yeah, no, thank you for asking. That's a good question. I'd have to say that, especially as I've been doing a lot of time in reflection lately and thinking about the last 10 or 15 years of my life and trying to understand how that relates to how I should take forward steps, I've been really just thinking about that question, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I've been really thinking about this time when I was in high school. I think it was my sophomore year in high school. And that's the time where it's like, you're trying to figure out what it is that you want to do, because mm-hmm. you don't want to be the guy that gets to college and you're like, oh, I'm paying to be here now. I should probably figure out what I want to do with my life. And so I just never really saw myself doing that. I really wanted to know. And so it was a question that was always open-ended, and my heart was sort of open for it. And there was this one time I was with my family in Locust Grove, Oklahoma. That's where they're from. Wonderful people. And we were watching this movie. It's called The Book of Eli. Mm-hmm. And
Denzel.
Good old Denzel Washington. Yeah.
Nice. Oh yeah, nice. You're familiar.
And I there was something just so kind of transformative for me about watching that movie and then being affected by it on a kind of a personal level, and then having really really great conversations of substance with my family, like immediately after we watched it. Mm. And so it was really inspiring. And I just kind of realized that, you know, I've grown up my whole life watching TV, watching movies, loving movies. My parents have really great taste. My family in general has really great taste in movies. And just seeing that movie in particular, like seeing the Christian faith interwoven into a Hollywood picture that also wasn't necessarily Christian, like quote unquote mm-hmm. Christian.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, there's something to that. I feel called to do that in some way. And so that was sort of the first inspiration, like the first thing that I felt within me that's like, okay, that's going to motivate me to move forward. And I feel like that's what I want to do with my life. And it was just an idea. Like I didn't even really, I had no idea what that meant or what that looked like. Mm-hmm. It was just, I needed to do it, you know? And so from there, it was getting into video classes in high school. And I had just an incredible teacher in high school. Her name was Megan Dennison. I cannot sing her praises enough. She understood me, and I looked up to her, and I was able to create and then have someone, a teacher that I really looked up to on a personal level, just really pour into me and speak life into me and believed in me, you know, mm-hmm. believed in that feeling that I had, you know.
Which is what you need at that age.
Yeah. And so that's what a really great teacher does, you know. And so from there, it was on to college, and I grew up in Silent Springs. And so that's where I went to high school, and Silent Springs is where John Brown University is. Mm-hmm. And so that's where my parents met. Got married, settled in Siloam, and
met at John Brown.
Yeah, they met at John Brown. My brother was going there too, and he's a couple years older. He got into the cinema program as well. He and I are both kind of in the video filmmaking world together. And funnily enough, Steve Snedeker, our professor, mm-hmm. he shot my parents' wedding.
Like 25 nice.
Years before that.
Wow.
And so it just kind of made sense, you know, to go there and to go through the program. I met a really great guy. His name is Zach Heald. He works here locally in Northwest Arkansas. And meeting him, I just sort of grew and started working outside of school. And so a couple of years in, it just made sense to leave and to just kind of get out into the industry and start working. It's very technical field mm-hmm. as well. I have that understanding and that sort of intuition to work with the tools. But on the other side of things, I have been learning quite recently that the call to be a filmmaker and to be a Christian in the film industry is really what I feel called to do. So I think that's probably the shorter answer. I think I was able to do it.
That's good.
Yeah, he crushed it.
Yeah.
I don't like giving ratings to things. /JK, I really do. I'm going to give that a 5 out of 3.
It was wow.
Really solid.
Oh, well, thank
good,
you.
It was a
I've
good
thought
summary.
A lot about it. So, yeah.
That's good. There's some self-awareness. I think there's value to that.
Mm.
So let's take a fun little tasty detour. Mm. Let's talk about Book of Eli.
Oh, okay.
Can you give our listeners, because I enjoyed it, but I wasn't as affected by it, so I feel like you would do a better job giving a quick synopsis. Mm. Can you tell our listeners, for those unfamiliar, what Book of Eli is about?
That okay, good. Good question. I certainly don't want to ruin it because there's one of those plot twists at the end.
Yes. You know?
But it is a post-apocalyptic film. It's not a perfect movie by any means. And you know, it's a movie that kind of inspired me to get into movies in general. And so I, you know, going into it, I would, you know, understand that you're not going to watch the most perfect movie ever right. made. You know, it's got some script issues. It's got some acting issues, you know, but it's this dystopian film. And Denzel is on some sort of journey. He's protecting this book. And that's why I guess you would call it the Book of Eli. His name is Eli.
I don't understand.
It's very simple.
Could you unpack that a little bit?
And so he's protecting this book with his life. He feels called towards it. And there seems to be some sort of force behind it all that is protecting him on his journey. And it's very profound. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
One of the, just, you know, speaking of script issues, the thing I thought was hilarious about that movie, because I really like it too, but when you think about it, you're like, this is the apocalypse. And Mila Kunis is walking in looking like a model.
Like Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, rub some dirt on your face, gosh dang it. Like, right. Come on, Mila.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for that quick synopsis.
Yeah.
So that leads me to my little detour that I think will be fun is, so what with that movie makes it, you know, impactful and tasty to you, whereas maybe other Christian media doesn't? Because I definitely agree, and I think that's something that I struggled with for a long time of being like, this is the kind of media I'm told I should make. Or when people would hear I'm into filmmaking, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, Facing the Giants.
Which is a perfect movie.
Which
if
is
we're going to talk
again,
about
it. Speaking of scales, 5 out of 5.
That's right.
Again, I don't want to poo-poo on that too much because even though I don't like it, I think there's a place for it. And I'm like, if that encourages people and, you know, whatever, awesome. Like, that's not my place. But I know for me, that movie does nothing for me / annoys me because it's like, if you want to win a football game, Jesus will help you win that football game. I'm like, what about their team?
Yeah.
Maybe they were praying and Jesus is like, no, screw you. Like, this team's winning.
What if the other team was just better?
Yeah.
And they lost.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you think about like angels in the outfield, like imagine the other team. They're like, who are these spirits like affecting the game, physically pushing me down so I can't capture the ball? This is an horror film.
Where is this in the rules?
Yeah. So that those parts
there,
are frustrating.
There aren't any rules that say that ghosts can't play baseball.
It's true. That is a writing rule.
That's
anyway, but all to say, it's like I think that there are, you know, Christians, young professionals who grow up with here's the standard and get frustrated with it. And so for you, a movie like Book of Eli that's filled with gore and language and dark implications, but yet has this humanity to it. I kind of am interested why that works for you and maybe then how you see that moving forward. Like, where's the line of when something loses, you know, value in that way? How much stuff can be, how much language, how much darkness can be in a film and yet remain a Christian film, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I think you probably answered the question in your question.
I know.
That's what I was thinking.
And I think you really nailed it on the head. And I, you know, going into college, I really brought this with me. And the one class that I really enjoyed that was a biblical course. It was called Evangelical Theology. And in the very last project that we had to do for that class, he asked us to pick a topic that we had learned about and then do a it's like a 20-page paper. No, it was
screw
it was,
that.
It was like a 20-page paper and a 20-minute presentation too with the paper. Mm. And so it was like so much work. And
who was your professor?
His name was Maxie Birch.
And I think I had that class because I remember
really?
That.
Were we in the
yeah.
same class?
I don't know.
Maybe you guys were. Why don't we, any of us remember taking classes
yeah.
together?
Well, I think I don't want to sound egotistical, but I think you probably would have remembered my presentation.
I'm sure I would have, and I don't think that we did overlap for that class. But
yeah,
that, it was a good class.
Yeah, well, he really gave me the freedom because most people sort of just did that very thing. They just sort of took a subject and did that project. And I knew that I didn't have the energy for that. Mm. I needed to put the two together. I needed to be like putting my studies in cinema with that course. And that started a really helpful conversation with and helped me understand what kind of brings me to life is like, what does it look like to make a Christian movie that tells the truth and is honest and is choosing to have a lot of integrity about like what we're putting on the screen. But at the end of that, not simply like saying that the world is meaningless mm-hmm. and that everything is, you know, nihilism and all that, mm-hmm. but that, no, there is hope and there is redemption and there is love and the power and grace of Jesus Christ. And so I just have always felt the call to do that. At least since I saw Book of Eli, and I think it was seeing it and having it being made and also having it being made in a way that it's like, oh, this is a $150 million Hollywood film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's like, this can be done, you know?
Yeah.
And it can be done better. We can take this further. We can try harder at this, you know? And so it's all very idealized, of course, and it's all very much a dream at this point in my life. But it is what I feel sort of pulled towards in a lot of ways. And then, like, how do you make the set really a helpful place to work, too, and that sort of thing as well. Did that answer your question well enough?
No.
No.
Yes. Start over.
No, you did.
It was kind of focused more on the movie itself, but yeah.
No, you did. I mean, okay. And you crushed it.
Thumbs up.
4 out of 3.
Stop.
I can't.
It's less. That, not as good as 5 out of 3.
No, I was going to say, you've given him a lower rating than you have previously, which means that he's going downhill.
Well, he's human, Noah, and I have realistic expectations.
It's only going to get worse.
Yeah. I love that. And I think we've maybe discussed it before, Noah. I'm not sure, but I will link to it in the show notes specifically. And I'll send it to you, Michael, because either you've already listened to it or I think you'll find it interesting. But the Liturgist podcast has a great episode on religious art, and they kind of explore artists contemplating like, I don't want to like paint a picture of Jesus, but also I like want to explore my faith or my lack of faith or the fact that my faith has changed. And I find that really interesting. So they interviewed, I don't know the director, but they interviewed the director of Last Days in the Desert or something, which was the Ian McGregor film.
Yeah.
So they interviewed the director of that and Ian McGregor, and they kind of talked about that. Where
it's
like,
Ewan? It's mm-hmm. Ewan. I want to correct you right there.
Ewan McGregor?
Make the mistake
so we
again.
Don't keep doing it, yeah.
Ewan McGregor?
Yeah. Ewan McGregor.
Have you seen his name written out?
But I've never heard anyone say that before.
Well, I hope I'm not wrong.
No, you're not. You're correct.
Noah is a Star Wars nerd. It also wouldn't be a Humming Fools episode without me saying a name wrong. I thought with freaking Michael Kelly I was going to escape this episode unscathed, but no, thank you, Ewan McGregor.
Your mistake is just trying to include other names in the
That's
in
true.
The
I think we should have a new rule where I just say,
just don't say
welcome. You know our guest name. It's written. It's on the thumbnail. Anyway, Ewan McGregor and the director of that, they talk about, you know, kind of, you know, doing a film that deals with, you know, a very specific time in Jesus' life, but then it's not this overly, it's like a drama. That's how they like approach it. And then other artists too, talking about not really finding a place in the church to be artists because it's very narrow what they're offered to do. Like you can do, if you're a musician, worship song, you know, again, if you're a painter, illustrator, like something biblical. And the fact that religious art, one girl's like, it's just art because you do what you're passionate about. And so even if you're struggling with your faith or even if you don't believe, but you kind of are interested by theology, it all counts. And so that's what was encouraging to me is that it's like, I can, like, you know, if that's something that I'm interested in, it's going to bleed into everything I do. Mm-hmm. And then, and it's allowed to change too. There could be a film where it's like, yay, God. And there could be another film where it's like, I don't know how I feel about this, or I'm angry. But it doesn't mean that it's no longer religious or applicable to Christians or people who are religious. Right. So again, like the gore and violence, I'm sure would deter some Christians from Book of Eli. And they would be like, no, it's not a Christian film. And again, that's fine. It's disappointing and it's frustrating to me.
Right.
But I think, again, what you and I are interested in is that there's Christianity / that yummy substance is beyond those physical and literal things.
Right.
There's more to it.
Yeah.
I do remember when I first watched it, it wasn't that like I wanted to have gore and violence in my movies, but it was almost refreshing. To have that be, you know, the juxtaposition with the religious element, because again, like people weren't doing that and still aren't to an extent, and so it was really just kind of enlightening. Be like, oh, you can do that; it's allowed.
Yeah,
and like you said, big names attached to it, which it helps that Denzel is a Christian and that he holds a lot of power and was very involved in the production. And so that definitely helps. But it was like, hey, people can do this and produce at least decent movie and, you know, be well-received. I mean, critically, people are like, hey, this is fine. Like, no one was quick to jump on it and say, oh, this is not a good movie. Because, I mean, objectively, it's a fun ride. So even if you don't enjoy the religious aspects. And so...
It's not slapping you across the face.
No, exactly.
The agenda of trying to make you believe what we believe, and because that doesn't work. That's
right.
That shuts people down.
Right.
You know, that's not very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, and I think a lot of when I've been thinking about this a lot lately, it's like I think most people don't necessarily have a problem with Jesus. They just have a problem with where we're at in the Christian faith, and the Christian culture, and so. That's what I can really kind of put my foot in my, you know, sort of stance on, is that like the truth, if something is true, it's true everywhere. And so I can try and do the best that I can with story to try and do, just be, have integrity with being honest with the state of our world, the state of the human condition, and not providing the bow or the answer for it all, but providing a sense of hope.
Yeah.
Because that is what Christianity is, you know. And so I think that's might be what the issue is. And some Christian like worlds and media is that maybe it's less about hope and maybe more of like we're trying to get you to believe what we believe, like painting the atheist as the bad guy, as the antagonist,
and
the Christian as the protagonist. Well, what if we flip the two
right.
and then see how the two learn from what God is teaching them, you know?
So. And I think people even take issue with not necessarily being told, oh, like this would be a good thing to believe, but rather, hey, what you believe is wrong. You shouldn't be believing that, because then automatically someone's going to get defensive. Like, that's not how it works. That's not how people change their minds. Which to an extent, like I kind of believe it. Most people don't really change their minds about things. You just kind of approach it differently, and you just kind of have to meet people where they are, because otherwise it's not going to work.
I think the biggest thing for me that's hard, I think, is a lot of, again, traditional Christian storytelling does not acknowledge pain or hard questions. And so I think for a lot of people, it's not relatable to where they're like, this family that you're showing me or this football coach or this whatever, this isn't my life. I didn't have the happy ending. God didn't come through. And I think like honest Christians are like, oh yeah, like life's hard. It's not rainbows once you become a Christian. And like, again, most don't necessarily always admit it, but like there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of doubt, but those things aren't separate from being a Christian. But I think in a, strive to be positive or to convert people.
Yeah, this is how we win people over. Yeah, it's like, by only showing the good stuff.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and again, if that encourages people, awesome. But I think a lot of people like myself would watch that and would feel alienated and go, well, that's not my experience with God. And that makes me more angry at this specific type of deity. And so if there's stories that are able to be like, again, spiritual, but not necessarily end with a statement, but maybe a question. I think that's more relatable.
Yeah.
I know you didn't like it as much as me, Noah. You know, you did enjoy it, but the film Calvary, I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Calvary is like one of the most, to me, Christian movies I've ever seen. Yeah. And it's just littered with so language much language. And it's so dark and icky, but I was like, wow, this movie affected me going forward. Again, not necessarily like I now think this, but it's when I continued to ponder. And same with like Martin Scorsese's Silence. That movie is like rough and you're just like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it challenged me much more than anything else I had seen in my conservative Christian upbringing. Mm.
Yeah. And I think we need to listen to that. And, but you know, one thing I do want to say that
hit us, Michael,
I think is important for me, and on a personal level, is to give the industry, the Christian film industry, a lot of credit, because if somebody didn't do it, then we wouldn't know how to readjust. Because 20, 30 years ago, well, I mean, we have been making movies throughout the century that are definitely Christian, like Ten Commandments and Ben-Hur and that sort of thing. So there's that part of it. But modern Christian filmmaking, you know, that more of like where we're at in the last 30, 40 years has been kind of non-existent. And so they're trying and they're not doing a bad job. Like people are going and they're watching. And beyond that, I heard very recently that one of the filmmakers that produces a lot of these Christian-themed movies went to a college and spoke about this really specifically, because this is a problem that a lot of people feel, is that, you know, Christian films are not quite going there like they would want them to, you know, and they're aware of it. They know. And what they say is like, hey, we're not trying to make Oscar winning films. We just want to share our faith, you know, and we're doing the best that we can to also show the love of God, the kingdom of God on set, and treat people with integrity and kindness and love.
Yeah, the behind the scenes is just as important as the product. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to commend there. Mm. You know, I think when I first started out in all this, I was very, even in that presentation I was speaking of earlier, I think I was very negative and very critical, you know, constructively possibly, but I think it is, I think the fact that Christian films exist is extremely helpful, you know, because then it gives me a guiding star of being like, oh, maybe I can readjust or do it in this different way and see how people are responding. And so, I just wanted to say that to positively say like we're getting somewhere. It is good that these things are out there. You know?
Yeah. There's a lot to learn from it. And not necessarily like, that they're doing things wrong, you know, but it's just like, hey, but how can we adjust to go in other directions as well? Just kind of spread it out.
Well, I'm going to cut it. I'm really glad you make that point, and it's true, and it'll be a good transition, because like you said, that first step had to be taken, and Christianity in general, the pendulum has swung, you know, like, heavily in a positive direction and then it becomes negative. So what do I mean by that? It's like, it is encouraging that the terrible persecution that Christians, you know, endured, it can now come to the place where we're able to complain about it being obnoxious or too much. Like, and I think obviously that like, as like, that's better than people dying. Yeah. I think we would all agree. Okay. Good. Noah's got a hot take. And so it's,
I think,
like,
more people should die.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Noah's going through a phase. He's been reading about the French Revolution. He's in a dark place. But yeah, absolutely. It's like, it's great that there's something to critique, because at one point it was just like, even trying to be able to talk about it was dangerous or not possible or illegal. And so it's great that all these films are popping up, even if, again, I don't necessarily love them. Someone's doing something. Someone's creating art. And so that's what I mean by the transition. Because again, I fully support what you're saying, is the excuse, the freedom in not being perfect. And again, that's something you and I were talking about over dinner, but I just would love for you to kind of share that with Noah and our listeners, is that change that occurred in you from being, you know, a perfectionist, and then kind of the freedom that you found in letting go of that and just being able to create.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. And I just remembered, it was really a particular project that I was working on that made me realize how perfectionistic I was being. I was down in Dallas and producing a sort of invitational video for a local church in Plano. Frisco. And wonderful town, and just incredible people, like truly sincere followers of Jesus. And I found myself during the shoot, I had spent a number of weeks in preparation for the shoot. And basically all it was a day filming with the congregation. And then we went out into the downtown area and did a lot of filming and just community shots and showing their character and their heart, that sort of thing, cut together with a voiceover. And I had spent a number of weeks in preparation for this shoot and thinking about it, mulling it over, and wanting it to be exactly how I had envisioned it in my head, you know? And I rented this wonderful camera, and then the camera, the card in it, like, just stopped working after about 2 or 3 hours of filming.
Yeah, I love it.
And I got such good stuff on that on that reel. It was probably 2 or 3 hours worth of really solid stuff. It's probably the best stuff of the day, I would say. And the car just didn't work. Mm. And that's like not something that I have even ever experienced before on set, where like the card itself, which is, these are like $300 or $400 cards, you know, that are made for this robust kind of filmmaking, and then everything is just gone, you know? And so my reaction was, I pulled away from the group that I was filming with, and I just got all flustered, and I muttered some bad words to myself, I'm sure, and kind of spent the next 3 or 4 hours kind of being a little bit butthurt about the fact that I lost all that footage. Yeah. You know? And what I realized is that I could have made a choice to react differently and to be like, you know what, that sucks, but I still have the rest of the day to film. I still have to complete what I've been paid for and what I'm here to do, you know? Instead, I kind of, and it's funny because I knew that, you know, in some way, but I was choosing to be angry about it. I wanted my expectations and my feelings about it to matter, you know? But ultimately,
I'm that way about a lot of things.
Yeah. And I think a lot of artists can relate to that, you know? But quite honestly, I think in the long run, it would have just been a lot more helpful to make a choice to be like, yeah, okay, that sucks. That happened. Moving on.
Yeah.
I'm going to make the best of the day. And there's something that happens within you as just a person when you make that choice. There's like, oh, I feel better about myself now. I feel more confident. I feel like I've just kind of I've made this personal growth hurdle, you know, and I'm now less of a child about things, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was really, I think, the day that I was like, oh, I'm a perfectionist. And that is not a good thing. Like some people think that perfectionism is helpful when it's not. Mm. It just makes you miserable all the time. And so I just started doing a lot of research and wanted to dig into that more and reflect, and just been making different choices since then. And it's been extremely helpful, truly.
And I feel like that's almost a quicker path to making higher quality work, because your output's going to be higher. You're not going to get hung up on things that don't actually matter. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, you'll be like, oh, I've grown through this, and my sense of what is good is heightened now because I've gone through more material. And so I think automatically your work becomes better because of that, rather than if you were a perfectionist and getting hung up on little things, then you're just kind of stunt yourself and not produce the highest quality that it can be, because it's just never going to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, and my dad is he's a therapist. And so he deals with people like this all the time. I shouldn't say deal with. That's
he discards people like this all the time.
he helps people that have these issues quite often. He talks about, my dad says that the source of depression is unmet expectations. That's the source of all depression in our lives, is when we have this thought, and then when that thought didn't come to pass and we're disappointed. And so if you can choose to not have, just lower your expectations and work on, it's like you're putting the bar from way up high above your head to like right to your chin, or even lower than that, and doing your crunches there. And starting
right
at
there.
That spot,
yeah.
And then get really good at getting really, really good at that, and then you can raise the bar a couple more inches,
right.
You know? And so it's just a more helpful way to live, and you're happier that way too.
Mm-hmm. As someone who doesn't understand what it is to work out,
what's a sports metaphor?
Could you find like a on the couch potato TV metaphor imagery that you could give me?
Well, it's like, instead of spending, you know, half an hour looking for something on Netflix, you know, that's got to be the perfect length, perfect genre, perfect thing to match your mood.
You're right on that.
You know,
one. Wow.
Just watch Parks and Rec again for the 10th time.
I think I understand.
That was witty, Noah.
I don't know.
It's because Noah also was thinking what I was thinking. We're in the same boat.
Yeah.
No, it's wonderful. And yeah, I just, to piggyback off what you guys are saying, it's like,
don't piggyback off of what I'm saying. Pick up after him.
All right. You're going to give me a piggyback off of what
there we go.
Michael's saying, which is, it's like, yeah, it's like, it's crippling. Like you said, you're just not going to get anywhere. And again, as we were discussing earlier, and kind of this new mantra, philosophy, whatever, that I've kind of had to buy into and do buy into is that it's like, failing or things being flawed doesn't mean that the thing is bad or, you know, that you're bad. And so, again, it's cool that, like, to bring it back to the Book of Eli, it's like, yeah, it's not a perfect movie, but it does these things right. And that's really cool. They took a shot at something. Mm. And with every single thing that we make, we're taking shots at something, an idea, a feeling. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're like, didn't quite nail it there, but I got this. And so the next movie or the next book, the next project, it's like trying to get that thing again. And so you're always chasing this thing. And if you're, again, perfectionists, like, either you're never going to make it because it's like plan, or shoot, delete, no, or just being so unhappy, or putting it out and just hating yourself and feeling so insecure because you know it's flawed, where it's like the fact that, again, we can talk about this big Hollywood production years later and have something to appreciate about it. The filmmaker is probably, hopefully, not like, oh, that one thing's wrong. He's probably like, I made a movie and because I had an idea. And that's the way to live.
Yeah.
Well, and plus the type of art that all three of us make, no matter what it is, it's like it takes a long time to make. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a short video, and even if it's due the next day, you're just going to be up for a long time trying to get it done. Like, mm-hmm. and it's going to be, you know, mental energy and all that stuff. And so if you can spend that trying to get towards a finished product rather than a perfect product, then you're going to be a lot happier at the end. Mm-hmm. One thing I've had to learn, especially like doing comics and stuff like that, where it just takes forever. Mm-hmm. I realize I much prefer the feeling of something being done than something being perfect.
Yeah.
One reason is that the feeling of something being perfect is almost never there.
Right.
Especially if you dwell on it for a while, you're going to find something that you're not happy about. Mm-hmm. Getting over that was huge for me, because then I was like, oh my goodness, I can finish things now. I can, because I kept my whole life was just starting projects. Mm-hmm. And I was always starting something, never finishing something. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good feeling, because you don't have anything to show. And so getting over that, and I'm not fully over that. I don't want to, you know, give any illusions.
I don't think anyone ever will be.
No, and that's the thing. Yeah. But just mentally kind of checking yourself and being like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be so much happier when this is done rather than if I stay stuck at this point. So yeah, that's a huge thing, I think, for most artists.
Yeah. What's one of the projects that you've experienced that with lately?
Has it been one of
the projects you guys have worked on?
Yeah, I feel like Snafu, our comic that we're working on, was kind of a big thing. And partially because my expectations for it were that it wasn't going to take as long as it ended up taking. Mm-hmm. And we can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. Like, we're almost there.
It's
but
glorious.
There was a moment where at very first I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be about 33 pages. Mm-hmm. It's not that long. Like, reading 33 pages is very easy. It goes by very quickly. And so I was like, oh, we can do that. We can put it out, and then it'll be out in the world. We can show people. We can be like, hey, this is what we like to make. We think it's good. All these things. So I got really excited, and I was like, oh, we can make it really, really nice. And so, because it's not that long. And once it got started, I was like, this is so hard. It's taking forever. I'm not happy with these pages.
Kyle's hounding, breathing down my neck.
But that's what I needed at the time. And so it was like, it was a combination of that and just being like, man, I just don't feel like starting the next page because these ones I'm not happy with and the ones I've done so far. And I would almost want to redo them. And part of it too, I realize, is the longer you take to do something, the more the parts you do later in the project are going to be very different and inconsistent with the stuff that you started out with. Whereas if you do it all in one go and you don't get hung up on small stuff, then it's all going to look much more cohesive.
Yeah.
And I'm already seeing that even just over 30 pages. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have done that this way now, knowing what I know now.
Wow. So, well, that's really inspiring to hear and to build on that. I would just want to reiterate it and help other artists to see it to be true too that are listening to this, because around this time last year, I went through a pretty rough breakup and was trying to kind of pour myself into my work and find that sense of confidence again, you know? And I had left the company that I was working for here in Northwest Arkansas and transitioned into Dallas. And that whole year was just a kind of a creatively dry land for me, you know? But when I left that company, I did have quite a bit of projects that I had shot over the years that would be really helpful to put together into my own personal demo reel of sorts, where you cut it all together and it's a minute, half, 2 minutes, and kind of highlights what I'm capable of in some ways. And when I started doing that a couple of years ago, I basically cut 15 minutes of the cream of the crop, what I liked the most, and I hated every second of it.
Wow.
Just was like, there's no way, how am I going to put this together when I'm just like, I've just spent 3 or 4 years of my life working on all this stuff and I don't like any of it. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't true. You know, it was my perception, my perfectionism getting in the way.
Yeah.
And where if I had asked my friends or family, what do you guys think of this work? They'd be like, oh, that's great, man. Yeah. What are you talking about? Mm. You know? But, you know, it took me like 7-8 months to coming back to that project and the timeline of some personal growth to get it done. But once I got over the perfectionism, it was done in one night.
Mm.
I didn't touch it.
Yeah.
It was done.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what you got to do. And what you're saying is very true. Mm. You know, just you practice and you practice and you practice and you step up to the plate and you just hit the ball.
Yeah. Yep. Sports again. I'm not following that. But,
Noah, can you take whatever he said and do the Netflix thing?
All right.
Thing?
So say you're on Netflix.
Of course. Every Friday.
Yeah, right.
No, it's very true. Like you said, stepping up to the plate, it's like, as a writer, I get overwhelmed by choice. Mm. Like I get stuck because I'm like, there's so many paths I can take to do certain things. So like, I can flashback, I can exposition, I can, you know, there's all these like routes that are like valid. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, a big thing that, again, I'm learning is taste. Like people have tastes. And so the fact that, you know, a couple podcasts back, I can be like, I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and I didn't really like it. Mm-hmm. Quentin Tarantino, master filmmaker, and almost everyone else did. If I was Quentin Tarantino in this scenario, I'd be like, what? One random dude didn't like my movie? Ugh, despair. And again, it's not a technical thing. It just didn't jive with me. And like realizing that helps you just me go, I just have to make decisions. And again, you try to do the best you can, but if you spend too long, like you said, Noah, just staring at whatever you're doing, overthinking every single thing, it must be perfect. Mm-hmm. Every line must be gold. It's like, sometimes the lines just got to get you to the good line.
Yeah.
And I hate saying that because I identify with kind of some of the perfectionist tendencies, but you will get stuck. You will get depressed. You will get, you know, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. If you think that you can create this magnum opus.
Mm. Well, and I think you touched on something really interesting, and not to drag this on too much, but talking about like using exposition or flashbacks, all these things, which are tools to help you get to your goal. And a huge problem that I think I'll have till the end of my life is tool obsession and being like, okay, I got to have everything the right thing. Cause if I don't have that thing, I can't get to what I'm trying to make. I have to have this type of gear. I have to have this type of, you know, location, all these things, for whatever you're doing. Like if I were to make music now, I would not be happy with the current guitar that I have. I would have to get a really nice one because otherwise I wouldn't be able to make high quality music, which is not true. Cause you can make music on anything.
Yeah.
And so it's like, getting lost in the minutiae and in the technical parts and confusing the quality of the tool for the quality of the work that you're making. And I think everyone runs into that at some point or another if you're an artist. But like that's another stunting thing, I think, as much as being a perfectionist about the work you're making is being a perfectionist about everything that surrounds it. Mm-hmm. That's also going to keep it from getting done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is no perfect thing in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch movies that won Oscars that were made 30 years ago. And you can see all the different, like how much we've grown as an industry and as a culture. And we're getting better and better cameras and better lights and better everything. And so you just kind of, you don't want to give up on getting better and seeking excellence, but you just choose to understand that it won't ever be perfect.
Yeah.
And you might as well just enjoy the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where like I've been trying to write more recently and I was like, well, I got to have this software to write and organize all my notes and all these things.
Or that would like, solve the problem, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because then I would be able to do it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I've done that too.
Right. And it's like you make excuses for not doing something and saying, well, I don't have all the tools I need. But people were writing on rocks.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they were.
I mean, I mean, people wrote the Bible. Like, you know, it's like they didn't have what I have now. You don't need anything to write.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, it's just a lot of it. And I think even for, you know, being a perfectionist in your work, a lot of it is just excuses because you're doubting yourself, because you're like not confident that the end result is going to be good enough. And so you're like, well, the reason it's not going to be good enough is because of this one thing here. So I'm going to be upset about that.
Yeah. Well, one thing I could say to any struggling artist out there is that the best stories that you see in movies and TV shows are the ones where someone is dealing with that, like a problem within themselves, and they're able to find a way to overcome it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so if you're struggling, figure out how to overcome it, and then you'll know what to say.
Mm-hmm. If you're struggling, don't watch Whiplash.
That's one of my favorite movies.
Same. It's in my top five.
I think we probably talked about that.
Shows me that I could be so much more unhealthy.
You're like, I'm fine.
It's what I'm always running away from.
The devil.
Yeah. Just J.K. Simmons yelling at me. Did I say that right? Is it J.K. Simmons or is it Jacob Small?
Yeah, no, you got it there. Yeah.
Second time? Yeah. Nice.
What?
Okay. Yeah.
Inside joke, I guess.
No, just the fact that I said Ewan McGregor.
Ewan.
Yeah. That's all I was referencing.
I see.
Okay. So yeah, be like Michael, guys.
I'm always learning.
Be like Mike.
Yeah. I think, again, sorry for keep saying something that Michael and I talked about over dinner, but that is part of it. I think something that I needed to hear, and so I will say to whoever needs to hear, is I give you formal permission, even though I have no authority, I give you formal permission to mess up and still be an artist, because that was the thing for me. It's like, I'm only an artist if my stuff's good.
No. Mm.
And again, you want to make good stuff. It's understandable. It's fine. But there's this fear in me that if I make something bad, I will no longer be taken seriously, or I'm no longer valid, or I'm not a real artist, or I should then keep it to myself. And it's like, no. Again, to whoever needs to hear it, put out your crappy short film, put out all the, like, put out stuff that you make. Again, like, there should be some sense of quality attempted, but who cares if people are like, this is bad. It doesn't feel good and it sucks. But again, there's this unspoken language. I truly believe that plays into the philosophy I was mentioning earlier, that there's this unspoken language between artists that should be spoken more, where it's like, you made something. I just respect that you made it.
Yeah.
You're an artist. You're on the team. You participated. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So.
And yeah, that's something that I used to have, which I've gotten it back, I think, more and more. But when I was a kid, I would just make movies all the time with my best friend. And we'd just make stuff. We're like, oh, okay, this week we're going to make a samurai movie. And the next week we're going to make a military movie, whatever. And it didn't matter what we had. We had nothing. We just had whatever camera my parents had bought most recently, which was never anything of high quality, you know? And it's just like, I take a lot more pride in a lot of those home movies that I made back then than a lot of the stuff I made later on, you know, that I thought was more highbrow or whatever I was telling myself. But it's like, just the fact that I went and did things without any inhibitions, and just like, I was just creating because it was fun and because I felt like it was a good way to spend my time, which you have to kind of remind yourself of that. Like, oh no, this is a good way to spend my time. I think there's a lot of validity to that, that idea. Just like, just do it and mess up. And if it's not good, nobody's going to care. Like, no one's going around looking for artists and saying, okay, man, if they mess up, oh, I'm going to be on them.
I'll whip them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't it funny how we think that is true?
It's just as egotistical as thinking that everyone's going to love what you're going to make, is thinking everyone's going to hate it. Or everyone's going to care that it's bad.
Yeah.
It's like, no one's paying attention unless you make something important and people are going to see it. And then they'll, you know, then you've made something important. So it like, that's all that matters. That's all you should strive for. Yeah. So anyway,
that's good, man. I'm learning. From you guys.
We're learning.
This is very helpful.
Again, I think it goes back to taste too, because you could make the short film that looks like garbage.
Yeah.
And someone starts it and goes, ugh, this looks like garbage, and they check out. That person was never going to stick around.
Yeah.
But then someone else is like, ooh, I like this premise though. And they stick around. You can't anticipate what's going to keep someone, nor should you try. Unless, again, you're being businesslike, and that's fine. I affirm you hustling. But it's like you'll go mad like I did trying to think of what people want to see.
Yeah.
It's no fun because you're going to lose them anyway because you don't know what they want to see. So make the thing that you want. And because there's so many dang people on this planet, someone out there is going to be like, ooh, weird samurai movie or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Something like they're going to get
weird,
it.
But
you know,
I saw it and it was weird.
There's a filmmaker named Darren Aronofsky that said the exact same thing you're saying.
Mm. No, plagiarism. I'm so sorry, Darren. Forgive me.
You're going to go to artist prison now.
Yeah. But on I think what you're saying is really true. And even on the personal level, like disregarding what everyone else thinks, I think maybe I showed you a video on this, but Ira Glass said something along the lines of, if you don't like something that you've made, it just means you have good taste. Mm. And I was like,
yummy.
Oh. I don't like a lot of things that I made. And so, but I was like, oh man, that's such a positive way of looking at it. It's just like, oh, he's like, just keep working. Eventually you'll get closer. You're never going to get, you know, to the, cause your taste is going to keep improving along with the quality of your work. So you're never going to be fully satisfied. Mm-hmm. But just like, you can take some, you know, happiness and confidence in the fact that you're not completely satisfied with what you're doing, because it means that your taste hasn't plateaued in any way. Like you still have good taste and you're evolving and you're changing and your standards are being raised. Like you said, you know, the bar was at the chin level and then it kept going. I think I'm using that right. Again, I don't know. Gym environment. Even not thinking about the rest of the world just for yourself, it's like, that's a really encouraging thing that, that you can find stuff that you're not happy with about your work that you've done, but you can still be happy that it's done. So,
Do you think in Hamilton, when one of the Schuyler sisters saying about never being satisfied, she was talking about art?
Yes.
Dang.
Disregarding the context of that show entirely and the story and what that song is about.
Disregarding the fact that it's called Hamilton. speaking of tastes, keen of transitions here, Kyle Stuck, thank you very much. Michael, let's talk about taste. I'm curious for you. I'm going to give you my opinion afterwards on some of the things I noticed that just kept popping up in your work. And so I'm curious if you're aware of it or not. But for you, I know you don't solely think of yourself as cinematographer, DP, you know, like you have a lot more to you, and I see that and acknowledge it. What I'm going to be reacting to is a lot of that work, though, is visuals. And so I am curious for you, since you do that a lot, what kind of taste you have in that regard? Like, how do you like shooting stuff? What aesthetics do you lean to? Are there trends now in the industry that you like? Are there things that you don't? An example of that just being, you know, I feel like maybe it was popular before, but True Detective kind of inspired with its opening credits, the double exposure popping up a lot and stuff. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at. And then I'll kind of tell you some things I noticed in your work, kind of just going through your reel. But
yeah, that's a great question. I think I'm glad that I'm answering that question now, because I think a couple of years ago I would have been a little bit hazy on like, what that looked like for me, you know, because I'm just figuring it out like anybody else. But there's a director of photography named Emmanuel Lubezki. Did like The Revenant and Children of Men and
a lot of natural light.
Pretty much solely.
Yeah, only that, yeah.
And I've been studying him recently. And actually, you know what? He shot that Jesus film that Ewan McGregor. He was the one that shot that.
Oh.
And he spent extensive time out there on location, looking up into the sky and trying to understand where the sun was going to hit throughout the day in their shooting.
How do you shoot in the desert? With just natural light. That's just crazy to me.
And there's wonderful apps out there now where you can actually hold up your phone and see where
an AR
sun is gonna
thing.
Be.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Dang, that's cool.
But I really, really resonate with him, particularly because all the films that he's done are some of the best movies I've ever seen, like Birdman and, you know, all those all the films that he's worked with those wonderful directors. And he actually has said that he hates when he has to use lighting tools. Mm. And I actually watched a video on him on YouTube recently, and somebody on that video put it really well. And they said that he's someone that he's an artist in search of truth. Mm. The artist's search of truth. You see that in his work, you know, and it's hard to really see Chivo. That's his nickname. It's hard to see him make and shoot films any other way than he always does. He's always operating the camera in his hands. He's always shooting on wide angle lenses. He's always trying to represent reality in a truthful way.
Yeah.
He's not trying to manipulate it and make it look cinematic, you know. He's simply wanting it to be, you know. And so that's been tough for me too, because I really resonate with that. And I love getting out into nature with a camera and just seeing what I see. And so a lot of times you'll just find these moments in nature where it's like, oh my word, I couldn't have planned that. You know, I couldn't, there's no way I can manipulate this world around me or the beauty that I can capture in that way, you know? And so I really resonate with him. And it's funny because he's the only cinematographer that has won the Oscar, I think, 4 times in a row.
Dang.
Wow.
Which is quite incredible. Tree of Life is another film that he's done, which is certainly a movie that's in search of truth.
Yeah.
Philosophy. Like it's like seeing, it's a more, I think I would say a more spiritual aspect to filmmaking, where you can look more into the aspects of the sort of the mystical reality of our planet and our life, and, you know, not trying to manipulate it in a way that makes you look cool, you know?
Which I feel like he would be a perfect example, you know, aside from, you know, getting to work with world-class camera equipment, lenses, and all that stuff. But for the lighting, for example, like if he can get away with not using the, you know, best lights in the world and having, you know, 50 lights on set, running out of time, all that stuff, and just make a movie and win Oscars for it, then I feel like that's pretty encouraging for someone who doesn't have any of that. Mm. And just be like, oh no, you can just go out in nature and shoot this stuff. If you know, if you're committed, if you're patient, if you can plan ahead, if you can learn all these other skills that are just as valuable as having the gear, or actually more valuable in his case.
It's like almost looking at the camera as an extension of you, like the samurai would look at his sword as an extension of himself.
Right.
You can tell when Lebesgue is operating the camera. And I think there's just something really cool to that.
You know?
And so that's why I've always, as a filmmaker, I've always loved having the camera in my hands. And I like to see what comes out of that, you know, because it's less of me trying to light a scene in order to then make what is there look good. It's simply trying to elevate what is already there.
Yeah.
And trying to weave that into a story, you know. And of course, it's where, like, there's so many aspects of filmmaking that come into play there, where it's like you're making choices about screenplay and story, actor placement, blocking, you know, production design and pacing. There's so many other things that go into that, instead of just simply operating a camera.
Yeah.
It's not like he wins the Oscar because he's such a great camera operator.
Right. You know? Yeah. There's so
amazing
much more.
Camera operators all over the world. It's simply that he has a sensibility for pacing a movie in a way and putting the camera in really interesting places. And he's pretty famous for working with directors that do really, really long takes.
Yes.
And so,
which anyone who's into making movies like drools over that.
Right.
Like, it's just one of the coolest things.
It's still going.
Right. It's still going. Yeah. It's been 10 minutes.
This is stressing me out.
And even the more amazing thing is when you don't, you're so engrossed in it where you're not even,
you don't notice that it's been one
take for the cut.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now you're just in a dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I've had multiple times with, I'm realizing now that they were mostly his movies.
Yeah.
But I'm like, after, 20 minutes, I'm like, was that one take? I didn't even you don't notice it because it's the he uses it as a tool, not as a gimmick.
Right.
To tell the story he's trying to tell.
Right.
Which I think is the most important thing. And you said that earlier with like weaving it into the story, because it has to be seamless. Like Danny Boyle chose to shoot 28 Days Later in low resolution.
Right.
Because that was the proper thing to do for, and then it really does make the story feel grittier. Mm-hmm. It feels more, the frame rate drops all the time and everything feels a little more chaotic. And that's not the type of movie he usually makes, Right. And his cinematography is usually pretty, not glossy, but just pretty fancy, and you get some really interesting shots and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. for this movie, he was like, I'm just going to strip it down. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be desaturated. It's going to be grainy. Because mm-hmm. His usual style wouldn't have worked with this movie. So I think the most important thing is just using the right approach and tool mm-hmm. and method for the story you're trying to tell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It all starts with the script. Mm-hmm. All starts with the kernel of the idea, and you grow from there. And I think Lubezki is probably one of the best out there that knows how to articulate that well with a camera.
Yeah.
Agreed. And it's cool hearing you, because I wasn't, when I was looking at your stuff, I wasn't like, who does Michael remind me of? I really was just kind of focusing on you. But now that you say that, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Because again, those are some of the things I saw consistently in your work was a lot of natural light, a lot of low light too, like kind of like, towards the end of the day or like in shaded areas where the light that is visible pops. It's like coming out of the darkness. Mm. A lot of nature, as you said, and also dirt too, is that was kind of cool. It's like the physicality of hands interacting with earth, like hands interacting also not just with the physical earth, but like creatures like caterpillars or bugs or leaves and then kind of a little bit, maybe not necessarily purposely so, but a little desaturated too, not like too colorful, to where, again, gritty is the wrong term because gritty we think of like grain.
But right.
Gritty in the sense of like it just felt like a very real film or a real like something approachable, not glossy, but like, again, dirt feels like the earth to me. Mm-hmm. And so it's cool to think about someone you're a big fan of. And I'm like, oh. Yeah. That makes sense. But I also never was like, copycat.
Good, like it feels
so you, because no matter what, you're going to take stuff and it's going to go through your own funnel and go through a filter. And now it's Michael's thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, oh man, that's so cool that you say that, because that's exactly the way that I look at it. Because I don't really consider myself, I never saw myself like being a filmmaker, or even an artist growing up. I was much more, I like played basketball and like I was a little bit more engineer minded. And then it was really music that kind of introduced me to making movies and that sort of thing too, but and that's really encouraging to hear you say, because it really is as a visual person. I have to, like the same thing with the Book of Eli, I have to see it first before I understand how to approach it myself. And so I would say, in terms of, to build on your question about taste, I'll sing the praises of this show all day long. Breaking Bad is, I think, one of the best examples of how its cinematography has influenced me, because I've watched that show probably 30 times at this point.
Yeah.
And so I've internalized it. I see where they're putting the camera and also where they're putting lights too. Mm. And so when I'm approaching something as a cinematographer, as that role and what I do, I'm usually just kind of drawing from what I can visualize from that show,
Yeah.
And I walk into a room and I'm like, okay, that's how I want to do it. And it's more of an intuition at this point, you know? So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's cool to where it's just natural. It's not. Because whenever I feel unprepared with things, there's like, okay, I'm looking at my notes. I'm looking at and it's cool to get to the point where you grow so much and ingest so much that it's like you are, you know, you're always growing. You're fully formed in the moment to where you just go.
Right.
You're like, this is how I approach things. I'm shooting as opposed to, okay, I need my shot list.
Yeah.
It's got to be more perfect. Tentative. It's got to be perfect. It's like, let's do it.
Right. Exactly. And I think any great filmmaker will tell you that if you want to be a filmmaker, you just got to watch movies, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if you want to be a writer, just read some books.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm pretty guilty of that, though, for not watching a ton of movies lately.
I feel like that's how I've been.
Guilty?
Yes. Okay. Constantly. no, just like getting so caught up in making stuff that you forget to like, oh, there's other stuff I need to enjoy. And I feel like I'm going to miss the boat on a lot of things if I don't keep up. But I feel like there's a tricky balance with, you know, being inspired by someone else and all this stuff. Like emulating someone else. Cause that's how you learn. That's the best way to learn. It's just like, oh, I love that. Let me try to do that myself. The problem I ran into, especially with my artwork and like drawing and stuff like that, is I would find, oh my gosh, I love this guy's style. I'm going to do that. And then I'd be like, oh man, but this guy, I love this style. And so I would just emulate people. And then eventually it would create these formulas that I felt like I had to follow every time I would approach a new piece. I'd be like, okay, I think I've settled into something that I can replicate over and over again. This style, just no matter what I make, I can do that in this style.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, I'm not going by intuition. I'm going by formula now because I'm trying to apply this template of the style that I've kind of Frankenstein together from all these influences. And but none of it was really me. It was just like, oh, well, I can't do that this way because that's not how this person would do it. And I realized, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Why would I think like that? Why would I not just go with the thing that I'm going to do? And I think that's the part where you have to flip over and be like, okay, I've learned what I needed to learn. Obviously, you're always learning, but like just for kind of finding yourself, it's like, oh, now I can make my own path of discovery and be better at integrating influences and stuff like that rather than just emulating.
Agreed. Absolutely. I think that's a powerful discovery. And
yeah.
Again, like I'm going through that now. Too, still, like, you know, we keep going through it, but it's like, again, I'm always like, oh, I want to be like Stephen King, you know?
Yeah.
And it's cool reading Salem's Lot now. There's a lot of times where I was like, eh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't have done that. And again, that's not criticism. That's you discovering you're different. You have your own voice.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, I have my own taste. And that's cool as opposed to, like you said, being like, no, I got to draw within the lines.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I realize now I don't need the lines. Like bowling. You're like, I don't need it anymore. I'm free.
Which is really funny because for writing specifically, my favorite author is Cormac McCarthy.
Mm.
And I think he's like, I can't think of a greater writer that I've, you know, enjoyed more than him. And in trying to write my own stuff, I'm like, how would he write this? How would he write this passage? And then I'll write it and be like, yeah, but someone's going to read that and be like, oh, that sounds a lot like Cormac McCarthy.
Right.
And so I'm like, but I want to be as good as him, you know? And so that's because I'm in kind of the infancy of trying to write, because I'm not a writer, but I really enjoy the process. I'm rediscovering that's a problem. And like, oh, the reason I get excited about writing is because I read things that excite me. And so I'm like, all right, well, how do I make this sound like this person that I'm reading? And I'm like, no, I have to do it on my own. And so like you said, whenever I do read something, I'm like, oh, I don't think I would have done that. It feels really good because it's not like, oh, I don't feel like I'm elevating myself over this work, but I feel like I'm getting my own direction, which I've never put into words and never thought of until you mentioned it, but that is a really cool feeling. Or like when you're watching a movie, being able to say, I would have done that differently. Not out of arrogance. There's some arrogance because that's, if you're an artist, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
Just feeling like, you know, your opinion or your taste has equal to higher validity than what you're consuming. But it is a good feeling and I think a pretty encouraging thing to go through.
Absolutely.
I want to go back really quick to when you said you weren't a writer.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Mm.
Have you written things? Are you writing something right now?
Barely. That's the only reason I'm saying that. And in an effort to encourage other people to be like, no, embrace what you're doing. I'm trying to find out if I'm a writer, if that makes sense.
I still reject it. I think the fact that you have that you're attempting to write something and have written more than 10 words, more than 1,000 words, more than 5,000 words.
I've written more than that.
Yeah, you've written a lot more than that.
Yeah.
I'm making my point. You're a writer.
Well,
maybe you won't be in the future.
Sure.
Maybe you won't own that image. But
sure. I'll take it.
Yes.
I think part of it is my identity right now is I'm an artist and I'm trying not to spread myself out too thin.
Sure.
And so I don't want to claim all these hats yet. If one day I'm like, writing is something that I could keep doing, I'll probably be happy to call myself a writer, but I wouldn't feel that way right now yet.
Okay.
But I appreciate you saying that.
Yes.
So keep doing it.
Okay.
I play guitar and drums and bass, but I wouldn't necessarily call myself a practicing musician.
Yeah, I'm the same way with that too. Yeah, with music.
Michael, don't try to ruin my point with your good,
thank you,
evidence. I
resonate with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I think.
Don't say that. It matters what you think.
Rejection going around. I love it.
Do you have thoughts? Then you are a thinker. It matters what you think.
Yes. I want Noah to feel like he's in the club because, again, I wouldn't let myself feel like I was in the club. Because, and we won't go into this because we've talked about so much before in the past, but it's the whole, my artist, once I made something or once I blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and there's imposter syndrome and all that stuff.
You don't have to be a writer. And again, you may decide that
you're
not.
Don't tell me what to do.
but it's kind of like if you're writing something, you're allowed to say that you're a writer, in my opinion. But again, it doesn't.
I see what you're saying.
I'll take
for
it.
For sure. I support that.
Noah, I've been hogging the Michael questions, so I'm gonna ease up on them, just like the bartender at Maxine's last night told me to ease up, on the liquor. I mean, he cut me off, so I'm cutting myself off right now, showing some growth. I want to let you finish out if you've got stuff that I've missed or that you are curious about, and then we can get to wrapping up with that rapid fire that I told you about, Michael.
That's
the sound of questions being asked.
I don't have a whole lot, and I hate to deviate from all the wonderful deeper insight, which is what we were after.
Let's get shallow, baby.
But and this isn't shallow, but before we started recording, we're talking about the Dallas film scene.
Mm-hmm.
And how you're saying it's just a really good community. Do you see yourself kind of hanging around there for a long time and maybe growing with it? Or do you want to be more transient, trying out different places, being like, okay, I want to be involved in, Pacific Northwest maybe and see what's up there and make movies up there? Or have you found kind of a film home where you are now?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think I definitely do want to see more of the world.
Mm.
I want to travel more outside of the country and see Europe and maybe even see Japan and those kinds of countries too. And so it's certainly, I think I would probably answer this question differently in a few years.
Sure.
Depending on how much more of the world that I see. Because I have found that the further and further I get away from home, the more I desire to grow. And to see more of this beautiful planet that we're on, And so, but I think to answer your question more specifically, I've been actually thinking about it a lot recently. And my family, my heritage, moved in like the 1920s from Oklahoma to California. And there was
along with everyone else trying to part of that migration.
Yeah, they're called the Okies.
The Okies, yeah.
It was a part of the Great Depression, mm-hmm. you know, and grapes of my dad talks about all the time, like grapes of wrath. Like that's kind of my family.
And the Dust Bowl and all mm-hmm. that stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so my mom stayed in that area. And my dad came back and went to school at John Brown, and that's where they met. But just in reflection and seeing more of my heritage, I've just really have had a true love for Westerns.
Yeah.
And the South, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of owning that more, you mm-hmm. know, and enjoying and just being more of a Southern guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so Dallas makes sense for that, you know, and it makes sense that like, oh, I felt kind of called there. I felt like this is a good community for me. And there's, you know, Dallas Cowboys and, you know,
right.
Fort Worth is a wonderful, like beautiful artistic town, but it also has its Western roots too, you know? And just all the guys that are down there are just some of the best people I've ever worked with. I would say probably the best people that I've ever worked with, you know.
That's awesome.
And they're so welcoming. There's no pretension. There's not really that big of a sense of competition either, because there's just plenty to go around. You know? And so that abundant mindset has been really helpful for me too. And I definitely do see myself growing there for quite an extended amount of time.
Yeah.
I don't know how long that's going to be. Or if I'll settle there, but it's a good place to be for now, for sure.
Finding an art community where you don't have to compete with people is probably one of the biggest reliefs for an artist, because so much of the art world is competition. And I think this is an area where social media gets tricky, because I think in a way it's kind of harmed it. Because of that, like, people are like, well, how can I get more exposure than this person, or how can I get the edge on this person, you know? Whereas,
did you read my diary?
Yes.
Dang it.
You know, like the art should be about collaboration and sharing and uplifting one another and things like that. So I think that's a big struggle, just looking at the art world on a superficial level, that I have, is that, you know, the people, it's just people trying to outdo each other, which I don't like. It feels icky. It feels incorrect with why I'm called to do art.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why I'm really happy that Kyle and I connected and mm-hmm. found that we were complementary. And mm-hmm. I think even if he had the exact same skill set that I have, we probably still would have tried to do something together mm-hmm. in some way, just because it's just that partnership and collaboration is so enjoyable, and you grow so much more through that than mm-hmm. just trying to compete with other people. So
absolutely. Yeah. And in the end, I think what you're talking about makes better art. You know,
I agree.
It does. And because nobody is seeking the perfection. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in competition with somebody, you have to be a perfectionist.
Yeah.
Because you'll never be enough.
Right. You know? Exactly. Or they're going to do one thing better than you. Yeah. And then you're going to doubt yourself and say that your own work is not good.
Right. And that's not a very helpful way to live.
Right.
And so that's what I've really enjoyed about the community down there. And also, in a more spiritual sense, that's just kind of person I am.
Sure.
It has felt like I've sort of been meant to be there, because I'm seeing other aspects of church as well. I've done a lot of work for mega churches and televangelist groups and a lot of other ministry kind of work as well, where it's like I'm seeing sort of like the heart of the church there, you know. And becoming really aware of it, and like the conversations, and like what that looks like, and potentially how I could approach making movies and for ministries or for conferences or that sort of thing, you know, where films are actually helping people. Yeah. You know, I actually, it's cool that we're connecting today because earlier this morning I had coffee with a friend at a company that's actually up in Joplin. It's a company called Christ in Youth. And his name is M.D. Neely, and such a good man of God, incredible filmmaker and director.
Mm.
And he made a movie about 3 years ago set in Ireland. And Ireland is having a lot of issues with depression and anxiety right there right now.
Mm.
And nobody talks about it. And
it's all repressed.
It's all very suppressed and repressed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the ministry that he works for is CIY, Christ in Youth. And so it's about the youth congregation, basically, you know. And so all the content that he's creating for it is specifically for that audience. And so they're wanting to make movies that are actually helpful, you know, for a specific audience.
Yeah.
And the movie that he made in Ireland was just incredibly helpful, even for me as just a normal guy, you know. And it's being screened all over the schools there. It was screened at Parliament. Mm-hmm. It's getting out there in front of so many eyes and actually making a difference. It's just a 10-minute movie, you know. But it was made with love and a bond. All the people that he made that movie with, he's still friends with today.
Yeah.
There's no sense of competition, you know. Mm. It's just making something honest and true.
Yeah.
And so that's the more meaningful effects of what we can do as artists.
Yeah. You know,
is understand that what we do as artists is taking the inner experience and putting it out into the world.
Mm.
And so but yeah. It's cool seeing how all those things are lining in my life, and Dallas is a great place to figure it out.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I like what you touched on too, which is, you know, I think objectively, whether you're a person of faith or any kind of conviction, just making art out of that conviction is something that can be respected.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone through different phases of my faith as well, but that's always been true, where I'm like, if I see a piece of art that's made out of a sense of you know, truth seeking or truth telling and sense of conviction, I can already respect it, even if I don't like the results.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's a wonderful way to see it, yeah.
Oh, y'all are okay. Looking at me.
Oh, it's
I got nothing.
Off to you.
Oh,
that was Noah's question.
We
answered it.
We can be done.
Well, okay, since Noah's tired of
all right, let's wrap the
conversation.
This up.
I have a quick thing.
No.
Since I'm looking at the clock, we can do one more.
All right.
It's not as deep, sorry. / maybe it is. I don't know. You might
make it deep.
You're deep of a bear. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I'm curious, speaking about Texas, I saw you today, and when people listen to this, it'll be a week later, but I saw you post today about film riots, There Comes a Knockin', and I know you got to work on that. I believe you were a grip, question mark? Okay. Tell me about that. Just to give the audience some context, Film Riot's YouTube channel, I think now, again, you could call them a production company, question mark? I don't know where they would stand on how they refer to themselves, but
I would say more of a small community of filmmakers.
Boom. Mm.
Yeah.
He was personal, so he knows, but basically you've been around for a long time making short films, doing tutorials, and like Michael said, creating this group of filmmakers where people can participate in competitions and try to recreate effects. And the leader of it, Ryan, Ryan Connolly, just going into his process and showing behind the scenes. And so they're a channel and group I've been following since a long time.
If you make movies like you grew up on Film Riot and Corridor Digital and like all those people that were making just short indie films in the early days of YouTube, basically.
And figuring it out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But just really showing helpful. The world the process,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really cool to see, because I know like Zach did stuff and / maybe you were there too when it happened, but you guys have got to know them a little bit and been involved. So I'm just curious, since the film just came out, what was the process of working on it and hanging out with all those guys?
Yeah, it was kind of one of those sort of a kind of pinch myself moments in a way, you know.
Nice.
Not because like I you know am too like such a fan, you know, like a weird creepy fan or whatever. I don't want to be one of those guys, but more of just seeing like how Film Riot and another company, production company down there that produced their short film called Maker Table. Guys that I really, really respect. And that entire community there are all the people that I was really looking forward to potentially meeting when I moved to Dallas in the first place. And so seeing how that sort of dream in a way, or I guess a short-term goal or dream came into reality. Here I am making it deep again.
Perfect. Keep going, baby. Dig away.
Was sort of like, oh, this is cool. You know, if you set your mind on something and you have confidence in yourself, you can do it, you know? And so that was it was a good moment. And a good couple of days, I actually got sick on our first day of shooting.
Oh, no.
And I wasn't able to be there. And they were overnight shoots, you know? And so I got kind of messed up in my sleeping schedule. But yeah, such good people to work with, very calm. They treat people so well. Definitely the kind of people that I just love to surround myself with, you know, and especially the things that I've been just learning about life lately. And you know, if you want to grow, if you put yourself around people that will help you grow, it's one of the most helpful things that you can do, you know. Now I'm in a community of people that that want to make movies and want to help anyone else that wants to make movies too.
Right.
You know? That's an amazing thing. You know? And these are also technicians and filmmakers, writer directors that are very good at what they do as well, you know, and have been doing a long time.
Yeah.
Making movies for a long time, you know. So a lot of what I've done in the production world has been more on the commercial side, and so and work for ministries and that sort of thing. And so it's really cool to just hop on a set like that and just soak it all in. So yeah,
absolutely. Well, I'm glad it was a good experience. Again, super awesome that you got to do that. Glad that you were able to have that pinch yourself moment too. Like, oh, this is so cool. And you deserve it. Let's end with that.
Yeah.
You beautiful man. I mean, to go back into, again, like it not being a competition and you talking about your other, you know, friend who made the Irish film, it is like, I think it's a big reason of why I wanted to have you here is because it's just like you do, there's always, whether it's the work, the person, or a mix in this case and a mix in past interviews too, it's like, with each interview we do, there's something like really special about the person. I think, again, your work's super tasty. So that's already gets you in my heart. But the second is it's like, you're the type of artist that we want to collaborate with, that we want to do stuff with. And I hope, again, this positive attitude, this type of teamwork is, you know, recreated in the future in people and that people take on. And like, again, I'm glad that Film Riot kind of had that same environment. And that's the thing. It's like when you make enough stuff, you know how hard it is. You know how imperfect you are. And hopefully you're realistic to where I think I was so scared, again, to be on sets in college or to try to do things because I just was like, I'm not good. I'm going to mess up. And again, when you have the right people and you're on set and you mess up, they're like, yeah, because you've never been here before. Duh, let me show you. Like, it's not the end of the world. They're not like, oh, wow, you don't know how to like, you know, set up the stand, you idiot.
Yeah.
It's like they knew when they were a baby and they didn't know how to do it. It's like, that's just part of the process. And so it's awesome.
Yeah. And another thing that I learned too, actually, in the last few days, because that shoot, we shot that, I think, a couple months ago now. But I was actually able to process with a friend that I made on that set. His name is Justin Robinson. And Justin worked for Film Riot for a little bit in Dallas and then moved on to South Carolina. And he's been writing and producing his own films for a number of years now. And
nice,
really, really wonderful human being. And we're talking about how in his experience and also in Ryan Connolly's experience that they put work out there. And then there are so many people on YouTube that have such a negative attitude, like have nothing good to say at all. Mm. And that's 95% of what they're seeing, you know? And so I really respect him because he's just doing what he's doing, and he's continuing to do what he likes to see in films, and he's doing it better and better and better. And you can see that in his work from when he, like the first episode to where he is now, you know? Mm. And so, yeah, they're a good team. Very good team.
Mm, yummy.
Love it.
Well, no, if you don't have anything else, it's that beautiful and wonderful, magical, confusing, other adjectives time of rapid fire. Michael, you know the drill, but I'll remind our listeners / tell new listeners. I'm going to ask Michael a bunch of questions quickly. He has to answer them quickly. And if he can't or doesn't want to, he can say pass / you can say pass, Michael. Okay. Does that sound okay to you?
Sounds great. Let's do it.
All right. No, I'm not going to ask you for a custom rapid fire sound. I've learned my lesson. All right. Let's get to rapid fire. First question, Michael, you beautiful son of a bear. In a physical brawl, speaking of bears, to the death, polar bear versus grizzly bear. Go.
Polar bear.
My man. Walks or coffee shops?
Walks.
Which do you prefer, a Series of Unfortunate Events movie or television show?
A Series of Unfortunate Events movie.
Okay.
100%.
Are you the one who knocks?
No.
Are you the danger?
No.
Did you do it for you?
No.
La La Land or The Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Oh, man.
That's tough.
Whenever I get like an exasperated moan, I'm happy with my research.
The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
That's what I would go
with. Interesting.
No, what about, would you say La La Land?
I'm like right in the middle, but I think it would slightly lean. Like right now, if I had to watch one of the two, I'd probably pick La La Land.
Okay. Really? Glad to have some diversity.
See, now I want to watch Perks of Being a Wallflower.
That's right.
I want to watch it.
Is that an option? Do we get to watch these? Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Right after this, we're going to turn that on, and then we'll read the book together too.
All right.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how distracting are Noah's good looks?
Mm. Oh, 11.
Nice.
Nice.
Do you think I should get a less handsome co-host or?
No. It puts people at ease.
Nice.
I like it.
And my last question, because I can't stop poking the Harry Potter hornet's nest. Is Harry Potter a boring character?
No.
Okay.
Why would you ask that?
No reason.
He has a vendetta against Harry Potter.
Really?
I wouldn't call it a vendetta so much as an aggressive chip.
I love Harry Potter.
That's why I asked. I was curious. Mm-hmm. I've talked to some people who do love Harry Potter, but also think that Harry's a little bit boring. But
he's a little jerk in the fifth book. I'd say.
Yes, I go through phases of not liking him as a person, but I think he's
not as a character though.
But I think he's a good vessel as
and
a
that's
character.
A good point that you don't have to like the character for him to be interesting. Or
I think he's a good character in the sense that the he's important to the trajectory of the plot. He doesn't have to be as I don't think he has to be as fleshed out as everyone else necessarily, or be as likable as everyone else, or you know, he can have a simple story and be annoying sometimes and still be a good character because there's a lot of weight on him, and a lot of things happen around him that make it entertaining.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you for this rapid fire.
Hey, again, I'll keep poking it. Speaking of Harry Potter, I just thought of this. Would he be more scary with a nose? Not Harry Potter, Voldemort.
I was like, which version did I watch?
Yeah, well, I watched this Japanese bootleg version. Voldemort, nose.
I watched the version that George Lucas edited where he added the nose to Harry Potter and everything.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I think he's definitely scarier without the nose.
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe, what if the nose was a different color?
She's like,
a clown nose.
This is random. Everything else is pale, but his nose is just.
Looks like a, like when people.
Just like a regular human.
When people
nose.
Like sunscreen their nose, it's just like bright.
I think
white.
It would just be more distracting than evil.
That's
okay,
true.
Okay.
Like Voldemort, what's going on with your nose?
Yeah, what's happening, buddy?
I'm not terrified anymore.
He's like, this isn't a Horcrux. Anyway. Michael, thank you so much for being on the show, taking time out of your trip here, visiting us to chat with us.
It's giving good answers.
Giving great, deep, deep answers. It was wonderful. And I'm a better human.
Microphone?
Do it.
Deep.
Oh. Your turn, Noah.
How'd that sound?
Deep.
One more time, Michael.
Deep. I love that radio voice that you're talking about. Yeah, you
do. I'm a better person for having talked and listened to you, so thank you.
Oh, thank you.
If people want to talk or listen to you digitally / look at your stuff, is there any places that you'd like them to go? Website, Instagram, any of that jazz?
Sure, yeah. My Instagram is Kelly with an EY _ Michael, and my website is michaelkellyfilm.com.
Wonderful. And as always, it'll be in the show notes for a quick link click action. Mm. Noah, speaking of quick link action, if people want to follow us personally, they can do that on our Instagrams, again, in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And they can do that for Ominous Media in general on Instagram. That's Ominous_media. And we have a website, ominous.media. And again, if you are a new listener, we publish fortnightly. Every other week around 12 on Tuesdays. And we have 46 other episodes, lots of content. So if you haven't yet, check it out, tune in, and let us know what you think. We always love talking with people and interacting. And if you have ideas for guests or any of that stuff, let us know.
Yes.
You heard it from Noah.
That's my contribution.
Affirmative. Anyway, Michael, Noah, thank you both so much for chatting with me. You're both great. You're both tall. And you heard it here. You're both handsome. I hope you have wonderful, tasty evenings.
You too.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
Let's say deep on three.
One, two, three.
Deep.